Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome aboard. Happy it's Monday. All right, it's Monday.
It is a Monday.
It is Monday. Happy Monday to you. You can have a happy Monday. Just because your football team lost doesn't mean it should ruin, I hope, the rest of your day, week, year, life.
I hope not.
Whatever. I mean, that's
we played the open, so this isn't where I should be talking about Vandy taking down the big orange virus.
Feel free.
Because nothing's going to bring me down for a while. I'm flying high. I've been for a couple days now.
So will you even say the word Tennessee?
Or I don't like saying it.
Big orange virus.
Those big orange. Nothing sucks like a big orange.
The state you were born in?
Yeah.
The state you call home?
Yeah. Nope. We got them. Got them this year.
I'm quite content to talk college football for the next 2 hours. Maybe we should take a poll of all the Gator fans out there and see if they'd like to do the same. I don't know. Maybe they would. You know, that would be fine with me. But we don't do that on this program. We don't bring up rivalry games where one team in the state is dominating its in-state competition to the tune of 4 consecutive years of sweeping the state championship. We don't bring that up.
Yeah. Right?
We don't talk about
that. That's
not bad. No, that's not bad. I'll say this. Today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, is speaking specifically about yesterday, okay, where do you place the most blame for the loss yesterday, players, coaches, or referees? Now, Tony and I are not ones to lay it on referees, right? And I do think there were certainly some bad calls, the non-fumble call and the just terrible pass interference against Allen Robinson. He's been dealing with that all season long. So I acknowledge that there are bad calls that are made. I wonder if we watched it from a Buffalo perspective, if there weren't a few calls that you could say could go the other way. But I've heard enough people complaining about that. We thought we'd give you the option to say if that's what it is. We're not trying to steer your vote here. I do find it interesting, though. I do think this phenomena is happening, Tony, that there is a large percent, whatever the percentage is, I don't know how large it is, a vocal percentage of the fan base that has had it with Gus Bradley, that believes Gus Bradley can do nothing right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to the point where this question about should they have re-punted the ball with 2 minutes or a little less than 2 minutes ago in the first half, to me, is an absolute no-brainer. The team just had a 16-yard return against you out to their own 45-yard line. You got about a minute 40 left in the game, or in the first half. A couple of plays, and they're in field goal position. Prior to that play, the Jags have punted 3 times. How many net return yards do the Bills have? Fat zero.
Mm-hmm.
None. They had none. Now, Norman kicked one in the end zone, but the other two, one went out of bounds, a well-placed one out of bounds. The other one was not returnable. So, I'm telling you, 32 head coaches in the league are going to re-kick that ball. And everyone today, Gus Bradley, this is a fireable offense. How could you re-kick, as one person deemed it, a perfectly acceptable punt? They have it at the 45-yard line. You get 5 more yards. You got a chance to pin them deep and keep them scoreless in the first half. They've done nothing offensively in the first half. Instead of putting them at the 45, where a couple plays put them in field goal range and they can get a little momentum, you think, let's back them up. Let's shut them out in the first half. Maybe we pin them deep. We get the ball back. We use our timeouts.
Yeah.
And we get at our own field goal at the end of the half. You're playing to win football. You're not sitting. I mean, this idea that they shouldn't have re-punted that ball, to me, is a complete fallacy. I'm telling you, there's not a head coach in the league in those circumstances that would not have chosen to re-kick the ball. I just don't understand what there are plenty of things to criticize Gus Bradley about. The 14 wins over nearly 4 years now that are just not enough. I mean, that's number one. But I do think it's gotten to the point now where any bad outcome, even if it's the right decision that results in a bad outcome, is just this further evidence to some people that Gus Bradley is a bumbling idiot who can't tie his own shoes.
Yeah, and look, like you said, there's a mountain of things to point to with Gus Bradley, and the record is number one. You know, if you don't think that Gus Bradley should be the head coach of this football team anymore, look, I think it's pretty inevitable at this point what's going to happen with Gus. But I don't know that the punt's the thing I want to point to yesterday. I can understand, and you and I had this discussion again yesterday, about the timeout that they took late in the first half. I don't have a big issue with it.
I have no issue with it.
Right. Like, I don't have a big issue with it, but I can understand an argument on the other side of that one. The punt, I don't get. Like, I just don't get, because I completely agree with you. I don't think there's a coach in the league that, if they're going to be giving the ball to an opponent at the 45-yard line, doesn't say, oh, we can try this again.
Right.
And get them further back, then yes, they would take that.
Every single one.
And unfortunately, because of where the penalty took place, because it's a running into the kicker, you can't just take it on the end of the play. You have to redo the play in order to get it. And I get the idea of, you don't want your coverage team to have to run down twice. You know, it's like you don't want to re-kick on a kickoff because everybody sprinted down once. I get that kind of idea, but nobody would not do that. Not with the punt being at the 45-yard line.
Bill Belichick would do that.
Right. If it was at the 35, there's a discussion to be had about whether we really want to try this thing again.
You're at the 45. Tony, you're talking about 15 yards, and you're in long field goal range.
Right.
You know, so, again, that's
there are things to question even from yesterday's game. The punt's not one of them.
Right. We can debate the timeout if you like, and I'm sure people will bring that up as further evidence because I've seen it on social media. Look, again, I'm not trying to say Gus Bradley's this brilliant coach. Don't take it the wrong way. I'm talking about specific instances where I think now people have let their rage blind them to the facts of how football is played. Honestly, the punt situation is such a no-brainer to me that I'm shocked at how many people are saying that Gus is an idiot and this is what part of what cost them the game. Well, the return is part of what cost them the game, okay? The return of however many yards it was by Brandon Tate that set him up. But every coach would put his players in position to say, hey, don't let him return it for 40-plus yards, right? Go out, pin him back like you've done on your three previous punts prior to that last one. Pin him back there, you know, cover it or hang it up there long enough so they can't have a return, whatever the case may be. I don't want to get too tied up in one iota, but I think that is symptomatic of what a certain percentage of the fan base, I can't tell you what percentage it is, just at right now they're seeing just everything associated with Gus Bradley through a blinding rage, and it just colors their opinion. Even when he makes the correct football decision, they turn it around on. That's my opinion. You're free to argue against it. It's 641-1010 today, both on the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Twitter is up and running. Hey, good for Twitter. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. What else am I forgetting there? How about the Facebook page for Jaguars today? You can get on board there. Again, the question of the day, coaching, players, referees, whatever. What's most to blame? The chilly weather? No. What's most to blame for the Jags' latest loss? Not for the overall record, but that's fine. I get it. It's all going to factor in your thinking. Just give us your feedback on that. John Osier will join us in the second hour. Jaguars today off and running on this Monday, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Glad you're with us. We're live at Everbank for Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University. True Teal. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. What's the latest on the Seminoles?
This is where we live!
Find out on the Florida State Seminole Report. Brought to you by Performance Painting. Quality coatings applied with pride. On 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jeff Lockerman breaks down the film and shares his insights with you Tuesdays during football season. Jeff Lockerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law on 1010XL 92.5 FM. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
First and goal now from the 2-yard line after the penalty. Jacksonville on the move here. First drive of the game. Under center. Ivory, the running back. They give to Ivory. Tries the right side. Tries to get the edge for the pylon. Touchdown. Chris Ivory in the right corner of the end zone scores from 2 yards away. And Jacksonville strikes first at Buffalo.
Didn't know what to do. Jags scored a touchdown in the opening drive, Tony. First time since the Miami game last year. They won that game. Didn't win this one.
No, they did not.
Defense was all celebrating on the sideline. Like, yes!
Hey!
Hey, we didn't know we were allowed to do this. This is amazing. We get to play with a lead. And Didn't hold up, but that's the way it goes. It held up for a half anyway, thanks to Dan Carpenter's missed extra point at the end of the half. I just want to give you my nutshell on this timeout situation, okay? Just quickly, because, again, I don't want to – there's so many different individual points we can delve into, and I know people are upset about the timeout. All right, there's a minute left in the first half. You've just stopped on third down. It was third and two. They picked up a yard. So you stopped them. It's fourth and one.
Yes, it is.
You got a minute left. Your choices are in my mind, one of two things. Am I going to try to let the first half run out, right, and just be satisfied with whatever we got here, or am I going to try to let my offense – do I think my offense can do something in the final minute of the game? Gus Bradley obviously decides, you know what, give me a minute left or 50 seconds or whatever it's going to be. Let's see if we can get down a field goal range, right, with that much time. Just imagine this in a different scenario. Let's say the Bills ran the clock down. They called their own timeout. They went for it on fourth down and made it anyway. Or they let the clock run down. They call a timeout. They kick a field goal. They kick off, and the Jags have like 15 seconds on the clock. Would not be people complaining today about Gus Bradley's poor decision to not save time at the end of the first half?
Absolutely.
Abso-freaking-lutely, right? So here's the thing. This namby-pamby, you let Buffalo go for it on fourth down. Buffalo always had the option to go for it on fourth down. You know what you got the option to do? Stop them. Okay? Stop them. If you are so afraid of the other team going for it on fourth down that you won't call a timeout to preserve time for your own team, you might as well get out of the game now.
Yeah.
You're playing to win the game. You're coaching to win the game. You're saying, you know what? We've stopped them. Whatever we're going to do here, if we can – look, you want to go for it? We got a chance to keep no points on the board for Buffalo, and we'll get the ball back with a great burst of momentum, and we'll have a minute left to see if we can get in field goal range. Or, you know what, if they opt to kick the field goal, same difference. We got a minute left. Let's see if we can do something with our offense here, all right? And you can say, well, they weren't doing anything. You can't go with the approach that, at least in my mind, that, well, they only scored 7 points all half. You expect them to do something in the final minute? Sometimes that's how it happens. Sometimes that's when you – when is Blake Bennett his best? In the final minute of the halves, final couple minutes of halves, right?
I guess, yeah.
Traditionally, throughout his career.
Look, I think, again, it's one of those where Gus just can't win. And, look, they didn't win, right? I mean, and they lost in that situation, too, where they gave up the first down and then they gave up the touchdown. So when those kind of things happen, oftentimes whatever decision you make is going to be questioned. I was watching it going, I never thought the Bills weren't going for it on that fourth down. Never thought that. I thought they sent out the field goal unit, and I think they were going to stand around and wait till the clock ran down because there's no reason for them not to, and then probably take the timeout. And I think Rex was going to go for it the whole time. I never thought they weren't going for it on that particular fourth down. When the Jaguars took the timeout, I saw it as them saving themselves 35 seconds on the other side of it.
Exactly.
Like, it was the opportunity to potentially give us a chance to get the ball back. And we've seen Gus not do that so many times. And I've listened to you guys scream at him for not doing that week to week to week, to not taking that timeout. I've listened to you guys scream about him not doing that. Every week when he doesn't do it, he does it this week. They get burned by it because the defense didn't make a play. I mean, they just didn't make two plays in a row, and it winds up being a touchdown.
How many running plays did Buffalo get stopped for no gain or a loss in the first half?
A bunch.
A bunch, right? So you're sitting there, all right, you want to go for it on fourth down? Maybe we stuff you again for a loss of two or no gain.
Absolutely,
and we got
yeah.
tons of momentum. Look, again, Tony and I are not trying to build a case that, you know, Gus Bradley's misunderstood and really all these 40-plus losses that have piled up are really misunderstanding. No. We're just saying in a couple of specific instances here, particularly the punt, I think we both agree on 100%. I think there's a little more wiggle room on philosophy on whether or not, you know, you can decide to let it run out, you can decide to save the time, whatever. But the idea that I'm going to be afraid that the Bills, who've done nothing offensively to that point, are going to try to run a fourth and one play when they've got a chip shot field goal, I'll welcome that. If I'm the Jaguars, the way the defense was playing in the first half, they didn't make the play on that particular instance. But again, I don't have any with the setup, the decision to call the timeout. Now, Gus, apparently after the game, let's play this clip. He was with Ryan O'Halloran. This is confusing. I haven't heard this cut. This is Gus with Ryan O'Halloran in the post game, and it seemed like he couldn't remember the sequence of plays. Tyler, go ahead and roll that if you would.
End of the first half, you call timeout with a minute to go. It looked like he was going to kick the field goal. Were you thinking try and steal a possession there at the end of the first half?
At the first half, when there's about 42 seconds left?
A minute to go, yeah.
Yeah.
You, instead of letting them run the clock out, what was the thinking on calling a timeout there?
With why didn't we?
Why did you call a timeout?
Why did we?
End of the second quarter.
Yeah.
There
was about 40 seconds left, and we talked about calling a timeout with us to get the ball back, okay. But we decided not to do it.
That doesn't inspire confidence.
That, right. That sounds like a guy who forgot the whole last few minutes of the first half there. Because there was a minute left. And Ryan even bailed him out and said there was a minute left. I mean, I looked at the play-by-play. There was a minute left. And that's when they called the timeout. And then he said, we decided not to do it.
I was okay with the decision. I'm not okay with not knowing that you made the decision.
The explanation is horrible, okay? It's terrible. And if you want to point to something that is the worst thing, that's worse than the decision to repunt or worse than the decision to call the timeout is the fact that you seem to recall an alternate reality in which you did the opposite of what you did and went through a whole thought process to come to that conclusion. So,
which makes, I don't even know what, now I don't know what he was thinking taking a timeout. I know what I thought he was thinking.
Right, save the time, let's get a possession, and we'll go down and do it.
But now I have no idea what he was thinking. That's all Ryan was trying to find out is, why'd you take the timeout? Just tell us that we took the timeout because we wanted another possession. He even told him in the question.
In the question.
Right.
Just
say
yes.
And he's like, well, we didn't take the timeout. I that is mind-boggling.
I'm with you on that. Again, the decision itself, I don't have an issue with. I can't defend that answer right there. I'm not even going to attempt to. Let's get some calls going. 641-1010. Let's head to Calvin at the beaches. Hold on. Tyler wants to play it again because he loves it so much. We'll get to it again, Tyler. I promise you. All right. Let's start with Calvin up first on Jaguars today. Good morning, Calvin.
Hey, guys. I thought the coaching was halfway decent yesterday, and even Bortles somehow learned to throw spirals instead of ducks, in between weeks. I didn't see any of those fluttering, balls, and somebody must have taught him something. But anyway, I've been a season ticket holder since day one in the club section until just last year. I'm getting so frustrated I can't even go watch these games anymore. But why is it, two-part question, why is it every time we have a coach – We want to burn them out of Jacksonville. Started with Tom Coughlin. Everybody wanted Tom gone. He leaves. He goes to the Giants, and they start winning Super Bowls. Got the same thing happen with Del Rio. Everybody hated Del Rio's guts and wanted him out, and he's running the Raiders to a playoff situation. So my question is, why is it every time a coach leaves, they seem to do better? With Khan's money, is it possible, because unfortunately I think, Gus's days are numbered, is it possible that he throws some ungodly amount of money at some big name to come down to Jacksonville? Is that possible? And I'll take your calls off.
Sure. All right, Calvin. Thank you, buddy. The first point, I think, Tony, some coaches hit right away, right?
They're giving coaches their first chance.
There's a litany of look at Bill Belichick's a great example of this, right? In Cleveland, he was just kind of so-so, right? They fired him in Cleveland. Oh, my gosh. How did he turn into this guy? Well, part of it is he hooked up with Tom Brady, right? Jack Del Rio's hooked up with Derek Carr, and that's worked out well. And guys learn, and it's, your first go-round. You don't know exactly how to manage people the way you do the second time. Different things. You learn. And you get experience. It's like, hey, the first radio job you ever had, were you as good at radio as you think you are now? Right?
No.
You hope you're right. You hope you've gotten better at any job, right? And so I think that that's part of it. I think that you can find examples of that. I'm just citing the Belichick one because it's an easy one that springs to mind. But there are probably
the Coughlin one works too,
examples.
And the Del Rio one looks like it's turning that way too. And look, I get it. The three primary coaches they've had in the history of this franchise are all guys that were being allowed to be an NFL head coach for the first time. Coughlin had college experience, obviously, at Boston College, but NFL head coaches for the first time. And Coughlin was successful in Jacksonville. He was more successful in New York than he was in Jacksonville, but he was a success as a head coach with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Del Rio, to some degree, was too. Right, he wasn't a great success in Jacksonville. He was just kind of okay.
He wanted something to take you to a higher level.
And it
level
played
of
out
achievement.
The string, right? I mean, that's the way it happened. And heck, for Tom Coughlin, the string played out in New York after two Super Bowls.
Right.
You know, I mean, it happens.
Exactly. They fired Antonio. He won that organization two championships. So, you know, guys get fired because, you know, sometimes the message wears thin, right? Whether it's Coughlin or anybody else.
But Bradley's not getting run out. Bradley is 14-45.
No. He's
done.
He's earned that. And is it possible Shad throws a offer out there to a whale, whoever that whale might be? Absolutely. Sure, it's not possible. He's got the money to do it. It's a matter of what he chooses to do in 5 weeks. But absolutely, it's possible. And, you know, if it goes that way, if there is a qualified candidate that fits that criteria, I hope he makes that kind of offer. You know?
Me too.
Where are we going to head? We got Kevin in Arlington up next. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, fella? Hey,
what's
man,
up, buddy?
Y'all have said so much, man. I want to jump in. But to answer y'all first question, to me, I mean, I hear all the stuff about the timeouts and different things, but to me, this was a quarterback game. No one talks about the last drive, man. You know, you have the last drive, you down by 7, the ball is in your hands, you played the whole game. So you got to have an idea of what they're doing, and I just don't think that the man just, Bortles just don't get it done. You know, and then it's 4th and 9. Out of all these interceptions you done threw all year, it's 4th and 9, and you get a little rush, and the first thing you do is throw a 3-yard pass. I mean, that's the problem right there. Everybody's making excuses, putting the blame, wanting to nitpick every other little thing that the team does. But the bottom line, that's a quarterback's game. The quarterback is supposed to pull you out of that. That's why they get paid the top dollar. And, I mean, we can look at everything else, but – that doesn't, you know, fix it. And as far as next year, you better go get you a Theo Epstein. And I mean a football. That's what wins championships. Get somebody in there who can take this team, take what we have, pick it apart, and let them put a coach in place. You know, I mean.
I got you.
All right. So I'm a good
guy. Yeah, I wasn't trying to cut you off, but I see where you're at, and I think there's a lot of truth to, you know, if you got Tom Brady in the final, all that comes before it. If you're able to go down and execute on the game-winning drive, a lot of that gets forgotten, as it should, because football is not about playing perfectly, right? You're going to make mistakes. I'm sure the Patriots made their share of mistakes. I didn't see most of that game yesterday. But when it came time to drive down and score the game-winning points, they were able to do it, right? And they got the job done, and Brady let them down the field. And, in fact, on a 4th down, Tony threw it short of the sticks to James White and say, go run and get that. Mm-hmm. And he did. So you do throw it short of the sticks sometimes. We can debate that one as well, the 4th and 9 situation. Certainly not calling a timeout there, more egregious, I think, than calling the timeout at the end of the first half type situation. All right, we got to take a timeout of our own right now. But if you're on the line, stay right there. I promise we'll get to you coming out of the break at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, it's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Maybe you're finally all out of those turkey leftovers. You know what? Dandy's got some delicious turkey sandwich options if you just haven't had enough turkey. But if you had, maybe you're hungry for something else, some ham, some roast beef, some tuna salad, some egg salad. You name it, they've got the classic Cuban, the three-meat trio. They got a little something for everybody with Dandy sandwiches and subs. It's always fresh. It's always delicious. The highest quality ingredients at the best price you're going to find for food on the go anywhere. It seems like a no-brainer to me that you pop in as frequently as you can to Kangaroo Express, Circle K, wherever they carry the Dandy and Anytime Deli line, you head right to the fresh case and you pick out the variety you like. Heck, you can buy lunch for the whole office, and it's going to be a lot cheaper than if you waste your time in the local drive-thru at lunchtime. So, whenever you're hungry for food on the go, folks, whether that's tailgating with home games coming up, whether that's just lunch, breakfast, they've got great items for breakfast as well. Do what I do. Whenever you are hungry, go out and make yours a Dandy today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The breaks did not go the Jags' way yesterday in the 28-21 loss to the Buffalo Bills. And yesterday, Blake Bortles addressed the media and talked about catching breaks.
I think it's kind of I think we've had a little bit of Murphy's Law. You know, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong at the most inopportune time. I think we got some of that going on. But I think it's easy to use that as a crutch or an excuse and say, we're not getting a break. You know, we're not getting any luck. Well, you know, it's on us to go make a play. You know, rather than leave it up to luck and a break and a bounce or a call, you know, just go make it. Make the play. Make the catch. Make the throw. Do whatever. We got to do more of that.
Thanks to Jaguars.com for that audio. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
This is the quarterback here at Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Sterling, yeah, that was. The one on A-Rob was brutal. I don't know how that one called. That was bad. Do you get fined for saying that? Well, might as well just keep talking then, huh? That was horrible then. Jesus. I don't know how that... Okay, I'm done.
That was horrible. Not the first time. I mean, harken back to the first game of the year, Tony. Jags driving, it's 3rd-and-1, and Rashad Greene gets mugged, and the league admits afterwards, yeah, that one's on us. You mean the first and goal that you were going to set up that we didn't get against Green Bay Packers is set up 4th-and-1 instead? Huh. Imagine that. I don't recall seeing a guy who had been to the Pro Bowl the year before, 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, get so little respect from the referees the next season.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And Allen Robinson's not the kind of guy who's like chirping in the ref's ear every minute. You know, it's not like he's got a bad rep around the league. And, hey, let's not give this guy any calls. Just a weird, weird thing. Somebody just asked me on the text line, what's going on with the active shooter on the Ohio State campus? I was unaware of that. Just clicked over to a news site, and apparently there is an active shooter reported on the Ohio State University campus, according to the university's Department of Public Safety website. So that's all I know. It's not immediately clear, they say, whether or not anyone has been injured. So there's something that comes out that's noteworthy. We'll pass that along to you, but hopefully that gets resolved quickly and peacefully. All right, let's go to the phone line. So I believe Steve is up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to chat with you about, some individuals that are playing, like Jonathan Cyprian. I think he had another horrible game. And I'm wondering, at what point do the coaches step in and start pulling players out? I mean, how many games do you have to mess up in order to get pulled out, sat down for the rest of the game, and maybe even, I don't know what the next step would be for that, but it just seems like it keeps happening. The same players keep making the same mistakes. Nothing gets corrected. Is that a coaching issue, or where do we go from there?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is you have a 53-man roster. You have 45 guys active on game day, Tony. What are your options, right? There are players who get beat in the National Football League or have bad games or whatever. If you know the guy behind him isn't better, do you go to that guy anyway? You know, Peyton Thompson got hurt yesterday, by the way, in the game. I don't know what option they had. And did you come away feeling that Sip had just a horrible game yesterday?
No.
I didn't either.
Well, there
may be a few instances for me that I can't recall too many, you know, major blown assignments or anything like that by Cyprian. That's me. I don't know. I'm not saying watch y'all 22, so Logan will tell us tomorrow whether – my feeling about that is wrong.
And I'm curious about, look, I don't know. And again, that's why we have Jeff in on Tuesdays, is to talk a little bit about the tape. We don't even nobody is watching except the guys inside the building, because they don't make it available to the public until Tuesday anyway. So you could watch the TV replay of whatever. And maybe Jeff will come in tomorrow and say that Cyprian should have gotten over on the touchdown to Justin Hunter. Because it was Ramsey was on the outside of that play, and it was Cyprian that was on the inside of that play. You know, watching it live, I just thought Justin Hunter made an incredible play, and that happens from time to time in the NFL. That was my impression of that play, watching it live and watching the replays last night of it. And I don't know the whole time if Cyprian took a false step somewhere and should have been more on that side of the field. I don't know. You know, but I didn't walk away from that game yesterday thinking Cyprian had a terrible game. I thought Tashaun Gibson on the long run by LeSean McCoy, I mean, make the play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those where you have to make the play. But again, I don't know what options you have to take Tashawn Gibson off the field for that kind of thing. I don't know, you know, and maybe there is a message that can be sent without taking those guys off the field. I don't know. They do continue to happen, so there needs to be some kind of repercussion for it. I just don't know what it could be.
Steve, thank you for the call. You know, I do agree in principle that if you're playing poorly and there's an alternative, that you try the alternative if you think the alternative is a reasonable alternative.
Yeah.
Again, you know, we've brought this up over time that guys see these guys every day in practice. They know, you know, as bad as you – people say, well, it can't be any worse. So it could always be something worse. I mean, there's always a worse player out there. I'm not saying that in this particular instance that's the case. I'm just saying, you know, when you think it can't get worse, well, it could get worse, okay? There's worse quarterback play in the National Football League this year than has been exhibited by Blake Bortles, believe it or not. Maybe not much, but there has been. And, you know, so just be careful what you wish for sometimes. I'm not saying you don't make a change ever, but a lot of things go into that, and that includes what you see every single day on the practice field, getting to know your team and who you think the better options are. But anyway, appreciate the call. Let's get David and Mandarin up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, David.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to go back to the giving coaches a second chance kind of bit. What do you guys think about bringing Mike Smith in, or maybe giving Josh McDaniels a second chance? And I think he can actually work with Blake Bortles pretty well. But all in all, I think Mike Smith might be our guy.
Why?
Well, because he changed the culture in Atlanta, like, overnight. Here's a franchise that hadn't won back-to-back seasons in like, almost 40 years. And he brings, you know, perennial success to the franchise. And, of course, he gets axed because of whatever, you know, this, that, and the other. I think injuries probably had a lot to do with that in that one season where they were just terrible. But I think either Mike Smith, because he's a head coach kind of guy, and I don't think he's going to be down in Tampa Bay, you know, doing the defensive coordinator bit for too long. And I think it's about time for Josh McDaniels maybe to get another shot at head coaching. I mean, he kind of stunk it up a little bit in Denver, but he went back to the mad scientist. I think he's kind of learned what's going on. And I think he could help Blake Bortles at least keep his job.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you having a reason for, in terms of Mike Smith, because that's why I asked you, just because a lot of people will just say, hey, Mike Smith was here before. He's a good guy, blah, blah, blah. He won games. I think if you say he changed the culture, you know what? I think the main thing that changed the culture there, they drafted Matt Ryan the same year that Mike Smith came in.
They did.
They found a quarterback who was pretty good. And people can malign Matt Ryan and say he's not really elite. He's pretty good. You'd be happy with what Matt Ryan's career has been if you had that. If your quarterback began right now, if you day one, you had a brand new Matt Ryan, he was going to have the same career trajectory that Matt Ryan's had. I think you'd be, most teams would be pretty happy with that. But that being said, you know,
played out the string. I mean, it's the same thing we've talked about with Del Rio. It played out in Atlanta.
Right.
In the last 2 years,
he had more success than any Atlanta coach ever. Totally.
Yeah, and, you know, they went to the conference championship game. Like, they had achieved some success in Atlanta that they weren't used to seeing, and it was happening year after year. I mean, I'm going back and looking at their records. They were 11-5, 9-7, 13-3, 10-6, 13-3. I mean, that was his first 5 years as a head coach in Atlanta, and then they went 4-12 and 6-10, and he lost his job. And there were questions about, you know, what they did in the playoffs and not achieving at the level of success that they should have. And look, we've talked about this before. The head coaching job is not officially open in Jacksonville, so we're not going to talk at length about the candidates potentially for it. Mike Smith is a guy that I think is going to get another chance in this league to be a head coach. I think it's going to happen, whether it's here in Jacksonville or not. I don't know. McDaniels is such a hot candidate right now and seems to be talked about so much right now that it would be hard for me to believe. I don't know how many jobs are going to open this offseason, but it's hard for me to believe that in this offseason or the next one that Josh McDaniels isn't the head coach in this league again.
Okay,
it's going to be somewhere.
Here's a couple of questions about him. And just like you said, I'm not trying to fill a vacancy that's not there yet, but just speaking in the abstract about Josh McDaniels, when Charlie Weiss thought to be smart guy when he was a coordinator.
I'm not saying I'm hot to trot for Josh McDaniels.
I'm not saying you are. I'm just speaking in general now. I think a lot of people could coordinate the New England Patriots offense because Tom Brady's the quarterback there. Josh McDaniels went 8-8 his first year in Denver, and then got fired because he fell off to 3-9 the next year. He was not a great head coach.
No.
And now I think his association with Brady has people elevating him in the eyes of the ranks. That's one thing. Then let's say they go to the Super Bowl. Are you willing to wait till February to hire your head coach? Or try to hire your head coach? Because what if you wait until then and he says, no, I'm not coming there, right? Even if it's the only opening, what if he says, there'll be a better opportunity for me next year? Now the field's cleared. All the top candidates are gone. Are you willing to take that gamble on that guy? That's maybe you are. I'm just saying that is a risk that's inherent with chasing a guy who coordinates a team that is one of the favorites to get to the Super Bowl, at least. So.
Look, and look, when Josh McDaniels left, the last year that he was there was the 11-5 year when they didn't make the playoffs because of the injury to Tom Brady. That was the season that he missed. The 3 years that Josh McDaniels wasn't there, they went 10-6, 14-2, 13-3. They lost the wild card division in the Super Bowl.
So they're great with him, great without him.
Yeah, they were fine without him.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you for the call. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back this date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. More of your calls. John Osier is going to join us as well. Oh, we also have a pair of tickets to Jags Denver in hour number two. So stick around for your chance to score a pair of free tickets, and we'll tell you all about that coming up as well. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, going to be a quick one for this date in football history. We go back on November 28, 1929. I believe that was John Osier's birth year. The Chicago Cardinals running back Ernie Nevers scored an NFL record for points in a game. How many points did Ernie Nevers score on that day, Fat Tony?
36.
36? What do you get?
40. Go ahead and chalk 40. That up.
Chalk it up to the old man. he did run for a record 6 touchdowns. That accounted for the 36, and then he kicked 4 extra points the day as well. He tallied all the Cardinals' points. It was a 40-6 victory over the Chicago Bears. A win for Osier there. Famous birthdays for this date, none more famous than Paul Warfield, born in this date in 1942, 74 years young today, 8-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first-team All-Pro, even spent a little time in the World League, won Super Bowls with Miami, spent some time with Cleveland, second team All 1970 squad, Hall of Fame inductee in 1983, the 11th overall pick in the 1964 draft, and he averaged 20.1 yards per catch throughout his entire career.
Yeah, the kind of guy who would have been an absolute monster in a different game.
Sound like he's pretty much a monster. No, I mean, hey, what would he average now? 27 yards a catch?
Probably not that much different, but I mean,
I hear what you're saying.
He, you know, had he played in a different era with his skill set.
Right, defensive backs were mugging him on his way to 20 yards per catch back then. Not the case. You're not allowed to do that unless your name is Allen Robinson these days. All right, there you go. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton apparently had yesterday's matchup with the Los Angeles Rams, and defensive coordinator Greg Williams circled on his calendar. Williams, the former Saints defensive coordinator who was involved with the Bountygate scandal that led to Payton being suspended for a year with New Orleans and led to Williams being out for 2 seasons worth of paychecks in 2012 and 13, the Saints ran a trick play with a 42-21 lead with 10 minutes left to play in the fourth quarter that resulted in a 50-yard touchdown pass from Willie Snead to Tim Hightower, and the Saints went on to win the game 49-21. After the game, Payton tweeted out a link to a video of the song Circle of Life from The Lion King and just simply tweeted, "Who dat?" in a tweet that most assume is aimed at the former defensive coordinator Greg Williams. Tom Brady led the New England Patriots to a comfort-behind 22-17 victory yesterday against the New York Jets, improving the Pats to 9-2 on the year, maintaining their two-game lead over the Miami Dolphins in the AFC East. The win is the 200th of Tom Brady's career, including the playoffs, which ties him with Peyton Manning for the most wins as a starting quarterback in NFL history. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have now won 3 games in a row after their 14-5 win over the Seattle Seahawks yesterday in Tampa. The 3 consecutive wins leaves the Bucs with a 6-5 record. They trail the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC South by just 1 game with 5 to play. Yesterday's game had one of the most emotional moments of the NFL season when Bucs corner Altron Werner intercepted a second quarter Russell Wilson pass to end a potential scoring drive for the Hawks. Werner's father passed away on Friday of a heart attack, and he chose to play the game yesterday. Neither he nor his teammates could hold back their emotion immediately after the play as he crashed to the ground. After the game, Werner, who wore a T-shirt with a picture of him and his father under his uniform during the game, said, quote, "He made so many sacrifices to me to get where I am today, and I know he would not want him to be the cause of me not playing. That's why I decided to play. I wanted to honor him, knowing all that he did to try to get me to where I am today. He would have been smiling. Very, very proud."
All right, there you go.
That's
the
cool.
Honda driver on the NFL. Absolutely. I mean, those type situations, I think, different people handle it different ways, and I don't think there's a right or wrong.
But what's going on? Sean Payton and Greg, what are we, in junior high?
I'm that way. So it may surprise you to learn, John. Tony will tell you.
You can just see both of them. They're on Facebook today.
Oh, absolutely. Snarky asides and
commenting
and whatnot,
on each other's
subtweeting
links.
Each other, you know, all that stuff. Hey, that's just the way it goes. You know, I wish I'd factored that into my fantasy calculations this week, right? Like, because revenge is a serious motivator. There really is something to it. And really, I was watching that as I had Drew Brees in one league, and I'm thinking, man, they're really not letting up in this game as it was going along. And maybe that was why. Maybe that was why. I appreciate all the – I got 37 out of Drew because I had a league where all passing TDs were worth 6 as well. So
ooh.
Thank you, Mr. Brees. Appreciate that. Johnny O is here with us. Welcome back from Buffalo.
Here I am. And what's with the old jokes during the break?
I don't know, man.
What's going on there?
You're the first guy in my – I know Tony's
I'm 50.
Not
I'm not
old.
80.
That's pretty old. 50, like half a century, man. You're past the
halfway. How old are you, 49?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm not 48 yet either, but talk to me soon.
All right, I will. Right? I'll remember this day.
All right.
Speaking
of
revenge.
The day that will live in infamy. You get me?
Yeah. All revenge. Right. It's a good topic today.
Yeah, well, it is. In what regard?
Well, you said revenge is a big deal a couple minutes ago.
It is, yeah. But why you think it's a good topic? You mean your personal revenge against me? Oh, yeah.
The old guy stuff.
Yeah, you're old. What are you going to do? My buddy Mike, who I play golf with all the time, turned 60.
Wow, that is old.
Saturday. That is dirt old.
It's 10 years older than me.
It is old. And, he's been, for the last 2 years, he's been relishing the opportunity to move up to the gold tees when he turns 60. So I'm going to have to shame him if he does that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
whatever. Happy birthday to Mike, 2 days belated. All right, who's most to blame? That's our question of the day. Okay, this is a microcosm. This is not the big picture. But for this specific day, loss more the fault of the players, the coaches, or some bad calls by the officiating?
You know, to me, I was saying during the break, I thought the game turned and was lost or whatever in the first quarter when they were dominating the game, meaning the Jaguars. The Bills couldn't move, and the Jaguars had – they scored in the first possession. They had three more possessions. Hearns dropped the ball on the long pass. And then they were inside Bills territory twice and got nothing. And all of a sudden, in that second quarter, you knew the Bills weren't going to stay down forever. Well, all of a sudden, it was still a game. So, I get the urge to blame Gus. To me, the game was lost with the missed opportunities right there.
And so
a chance to really put it away.
You put that on the players not making big plays on third down, basically. I mean, that's what it
I
boils
get,
down
yeah.
to, right?
I guess. I mean,
it's third. And I'm looking at the first instance you're talking about. Certainly, the Hearns drop that's on Hearns,
sure.
Right? And that should have been a first down, and who knows how much more to go along with.
We had sort of the bad break. I mean, I say a bad break. It was late in the first quarter, if I'm remembering it right, when Ivory went out. You know, so on one of those drives.
To me, that changed everything.
On one of those drives, you're going, you're feeling it, and then all of a sudden, you've got to deal with this player being out, and TJ's got the ankle. So.
That was the third play or the third drive of the game, right? And then TJ came in. I remember taking the notes on it yesterday,
right.
Looking back afterwards. And they ended up having a 3rd and 6 from the Buffalo 43, and Blake got sacked by Marcell Dareus.
Right. So all of a sudden you got that change situation where there's a guy in there. So
was that the one Linder got kind of whiffed on?
I think so.
Right?
I think it was Williams knocked his hands down. And
then maybe it wasn't that because I think I'm thinking Williams got by him on the whiff as well, but maybe it was Dar. Regardless. So you think it boiled down to the missed opportunities in the first quarter.
At that point, and then, again, we've been doing this show for a few years. I rarely come in here and talk officiating because, generally speaking, just following this league long enough, I just don't think there's a big conspiracy, all that stuff. Boy, it's hard. I've never seen the forward progress called that way. I've never seen it
crazy.
Interpreted that. I mean,
never.
And, you watch a million games in your life, and you sort of see different scenarios, and you draw from it and say, okay, yeah. When they called it, I was like.
In theory, every fumble, the guy's forward progress stops at the point he drops the ball.
And there was never – I mean, I see forward progress when you go into the line and you're sort of churning your feet and there's sort of a whistle and a
push and pull. Or maybe you're moving back a half
yard
or whatever.
This is a straight tackle.
Right. Straight this tackle was, balls
yeah,
out.
A play that looked as routine as any, what was it, 1 yard run to the left. It looked just like a million other 1 yard run to the left. And I never got the feeling at all that the play was over until the guy hit the ground. I mean, that was the bam bam nature of the play. And you're calling for. I think that was a clear botch.
Yeah, that, and I could have understand even if they said, all right, down, whatever, and then, oh, on review, there's a clear recovery, an immediate recovery, and let's give it to the Jags. But to get bailed out on the forward progress, and then look, maybe it happens all around the league because we focus on one team. But for a guy who went to the Pro Bowl last year and had the numbers that Allen Robinson did to get the tiny lack of respect –
And I said a couple of times early in the season this season that that was a worrying thing for the Jaguars if that was going to continue because of the physical nature of his game. That if he's not going to get calls, if they're going to be allowed to mug him, he's not going to be a guy. Marquise Lee, if he's not getting calls, is a guy who at times is going to run 3 yards open. So he can sort of negate that by not being touched. Allen Robinson is a guy who, you know, he can use his moves to get deep, but he's generally not going to be running 3 yards free on a crossing pattern. He's going to use his body. He's going to make the defender defend him. They're going to have to go through him, which by definition, when you go through him or when you grab a shoulder pad and pull it, most of the time that's called interference. And he's not getting that call, which is a big, you know, I mean, it's a big reason why his numbers are down.
Call anything. Call holding, call interference, call something. But it's certainly a penalty. He's being tackled by the shoulder pad.
Yeah. And again, there's missed calls on both sides. Coaches are going to come in here and say, hey, it's, you know.
Oh, no. Rex said it was a beautifully officiated game yesterday.
I'm sure it
Apparently
was.
There were no missed calls on
both sides. Oh, it was a thing of beauty. Yeah. I mean, it's
great, great crew.
So, you know. Those plays didn't help on the pass interference. I guess they called it on SIP on the Tashaun Gibson.
I thought they called it
interception.
On Prince.
Was
Prince.
It okay?
Yeah.
I was watching this morning. I wasn't sure about that one. You guys may have had a better angle on that than I did. I
didn't see anything.
Certainly
I didn't either.
If that
but
was going to get called, I don't know how Allen Robinson's was.
I was basing it on Logan and Baselli saying that they saw something early in the route.
Yeah.
That and I heard Tony on this morning with Dan and Jeff. I think saying that that should have been illegal contact because it happened before the ball was in the air. Because then you have a spot foul with the pass interference, which again is a huge chunky yardage. Even if you're giving them a first down,
well, even on the first play of the Jaguars' final drive, is about 6-7 plays before the Robinson non interference on the pass to Sterling, which they went ahead, they overcame that by getting a first down. But from the angle we had. I'm sitting next to Mike DiRocco in the press box, and we're both like, he got bumped three times before the ball got there. Now, that was a harder call because it was sort of both going after the ball for contact. But if you look back on it, there was clear contact beforehand. As Blake said, though, you know, they're not getting it. You got to play through it, and you got to make a play regardless. And, you know, that.
Right. For me, I'm not going to say the refs cost that game, but they did contribute to it. Certainly, there were a couple. The two main calls, the non-fumble, and the late pass interference on Allen Robinson.
And I think, in fairness to the listener who's probably saying, oh, then you're sitting there talking about officiating, what are you doing? If you're going to analyze and criticize Bortles throughout the entire year, which we have, on the play to Allen Robinson that didn't get called interference, if that's not interference, that's a pretty good play.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good pass. It seemed like he put it where he was supposed to put it on 3rd and 4, 4 minutes to go in the game. Pretty clutch play that, from looking at it, it felt like he deserved better on that.
The one counterpoint is, let's say they pick that up, right? They still got to go down and score a touchdown.
Absolutely.
Right? And the same thing with the fumble. Who knows what they do on the very next play? It's
and the
a
frame
different.
Of reference is not that they go score there, but they probably should have had the opportunity.
They should have had the opportunity, correct. But it's even worse if like that does happen and takes away a potential touchdown. You know, if you're in the end zone and you get away with that call, you know, something like that. Anyway, we'll take a timeout here, and we'll welcome more of your calls on the other side with John Osier from Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, it's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here in North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. Visit guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com. Or visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. If you'd like to get on the program, 641-1010, both on the phone line, and that's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. The social media question of the day presented by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. What for specifically yesterday's game, players, coaches, or refs, who's most to blame for the outcome of that contest yesterday? What did you make of the way Blake Bortles played yesterday?
You know, I don't know if he played great, but he certainly did enough to put him in position. I mean, I think if he had played poorly, they'd have gotten beat badly. So I don't think he played poorly. He made plays with his feet to keep him in the game. He threw two touchdowns, no picks. I thought the pass to Marquise, that it was a touchdown, was a very good pass. I thought he had some stuff that was taken away from him by penalties not getting called that hurt. The Hearns play would have been nice on the last drop. You know, there were still some plays where he threw deep where I thought he could have put more air under it to give his guys a chance. The play to Marquise in the first half down the right sideline that Marquise sort of – he missed about like 2 yards. It felt like you could have given your receiver a better chance there. But overall, you know, I thought he played okay.
I thought that's good. He's thrown the ball all year.
Yeah.
That's as good as it's looked coming out of his hand this year. Again, he's just 13-26 for 126 yards. So
and
I'm
that's
not
the reason
heat
I sort
praise.
Of couch it with. You know, I can't sit there and say, boy, he was just unbelievable. But, you know, it felt like a little bit of a start, if you can build on that. Not throwing the pick. You know, everybody's been hounding on him all year about the picks. Didn't do that. Got a lot of yardage on running. So probably played well enough to win the game.
And I thought that was a function of – the running I thought was a function of who they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
This was a team that's got the most sacks in the league, and I think there was a little bit of that. If it's not there, go.
Well,
like, we need you to use
really
your legs.
Hackett has been
pounding
on him on that for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And Blake mentioned in a press conference a couple weeks ago, Nathaniels mentioned it, that he really wants that. Hey, first read, second read, if it's not there, go. Don't take the sack. That'll reduce your turnovers. If you like it, do it. If you don't, run. He did some of that in Indy, if you remember. Or not in Indy, but in London. That was sort of the MO. So it feels like he's maybe a little more comfortable in sort of getting that approach a little more. Plus, as he said after the game, Buffalo plays a lot of man. So when that's the case, then if the quarterback takes off, you're going to have some lanes.
Could be this week, too. I mean,
sure.
Denver does the same thing. They rely on those pass rushers to go get the guy, so it could be the same kind of plan this week.
Oof.
I think the one thing we got to – or one of the things we need to be careful about with Blake is not just compare his performance to his own past performance. That's not the standard when
right.
you're a third-year starting quarterback in the National Football League. You know, and I do think – well, Blake played pretty good because he didn't turn it over. I mean – it was just
what
okay.
meant,
it was
two
okay.
touchdowns, no interceptions. He had 80 yards rushing, and he had 3 or 4 plays he made with his legs to keep some drives alive.
I understand.
So, again, that's why I'm not sitting here going, oh, boy, he was outstanding, unbelievable. He was probably good enough to win that game under a lot of circumstances. Yeah,
Some. If he obviously wasn't good enough to win it yesterday.
Right, we're still all sort of waiting for that game. You know, at some point in the NFL, you need your quarterback to be the guy and to
make
the
big play. We had a caller
talk
about that earlier. Yeah, fourth quarter, it's still there for you.
Right.
Go out and drive down and make the play.
I heard that call. It's a good point. I mean, there's been a lot of games like that this year.
Yeah.
You know, and pretty much every close loss in the NFL, 90% of them you can say that about. Well, if the quarterback made a play, but that's what they're dealing with this year. They got 6 of those.
And you can certainly argue that if the pass interference is properly called in Allen
sure.
Robinson, they're continuing that drive, and maybe they do go down and score.
I think that's why
we
you need to
know.
Discuss that play, because really that's a 3rd and 4 play where I watched it back a couple times this morning. pretty hard to make a better throw, better decision. You know, pretty decisive throw, pretty good throw out there.
Blown call, period.
So if you're going to, you know, well, you haven't made a big play all year, Blake. Well, on that one, it's hard to blame him for not making that play.
All right, coming out of that circumstance now, Jags are hot, right? The refs blew the call. Right?
Oh, I thought you meant like this season.
No, not red hot, okay?
All right.
Jags are sizzling hot. The Jags are ticked off, right? The
okay. play oh, clock, that kind of hot. Okay,
they're hot, right? They're right. mad. They're angry. They're engaging the referees. How can you blow this call? Meanwhile, tick, 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 tick. Right. Play clock's running down, okay? It's fourth and four. You right. cannot let it become fourth and nine due to your own lack
right.
of getting the snap off on time. Assess the blame on what
well,
happened there.
At that point, I think as the head coach, you're going to take the hit on that one no matter who probably should have called it. We talked during the break. Could Blake have called time out there, seeing the play clock? Yeah. Gus, after the game, said, well, they had gotten a bunch of plays off in that same situation. And when I watched it today, they did have a lot of snaps at 2 and 1 seconds yesterday. So maybe you're using that as your frame of reference. I've got to think that even with – my thing on it is even without the play clock issue, you're fourth and fourth, a game on the line. Timeouts, it was, what, 3:30 left? About
something yeah. like that, yeah.
Timeout's really not a factor there. Maybe you take one just to calm it down, even if you're not approaching that play clock.
Yeah,
so I'd have taken a timeout.
That's debatable because if you got the play, if you know what play you want to run.
Fourth and four, though.
Yeah, but if you've got – look, if you know it's fourth and four, like I would
right, if you've got the defense you want on the field to match up, then yeah.
You right, know, if you got a look you're not expecting once you line up, they never got to the point where that became the issue, I don't
right.
think. I just – it was – so, yeah, could Gus call the timeout? Absolutely.
Right.
But Gus is engaging the referee
right.
on that play, right? To me, the first line of defense, your quarterback
yeah.
needs to get in the huddle, get these guys huddled up,
right.
and he can call the time. As he is up at the line or in the shotgun and it's ticking down, I know we're not going to be able to get this off timeout. You
right.
see it all the time
right.
happen. Now, it could come from the sideline as
and
well.
As we said during break, he has done that a lot. Clearly.
Called the timeout.
Right. They have told him, and as you should with a young quarterback, if you don't like it, call timeout. Get out of the play. Calm the situation down. Somebody should have. So,
yeah, right. And like you said, I think it falls on the coach ultimately in that kind of situation. And you're watching your quarterback who is, I mean, he's going after the officials after the play,
yeah.
and you can almost feel it like you're watching going, somebody needs to take control
right.
of what's happening right now. And even if that stuff wasn't going on, then they get the playoff easily, but it was happening.
Right.
And look, Blake could have called the timeout. Gus has to call the timeout to protect his own guys,
right.
put themselves and keep themselves in a good situation. Eventually, he has to call the timeout to keep it at fourth and four.
Here's one on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Why is it the players that are used to making big plays come to this team and seem to not be able to make big plays? That's coaching, player development, hashtag Jaguars today. I'm not sure which specific ones you're referring to,
right.
but there's – look, I'm not – again – the coach ultimately is going to be responsible for
Absolutely.
The record of his team.
Okay,
right. So he's responsible for everything in a sense. But when you break it down to the micro level, right, you don't get in each player's ear. Here's where you need to stand on this play. Here's where you need to stand.
Right.
You coach them. They're supposed to be prepared. Deshaun Gibson, does Gus need to tell him, don't stop. Continue on to make the tackle on
right.
LeSean McCoy? I'm not sure
right.
what.
Everything about that play told you that, you know, Deshaun has to fill that gap. It's there. It's designed that way. It was, you know, if you're going to get on coaching, that was a perfectly designed defense for that play. That the gap is filled. Ramsey has the edge. And all Deshaun has to do is go make that tackle. And I'm sure he would tell you that. You know, that I don't know where coaching comes into play on that beyond telling the guy afterward, hey, remember we talked about filling that gap? I mean, so that's sort of basic stuff.
I'm with you. Here's one that
now, granted, McCoy, that's what he does well, is make a player think they're making the tackle. Then he makes a move, and the gap's gone, and you're gone. So that's his game. That's why he's who he is. But on that play, it should have been made.
Here's one that says, excuses are the tools of the incompetent. I don't know what that's specifically referring to.
Probably me.
Could be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can label things excuses. You can also sometimes label them as reasons.
Right.
Right? And we're not, again.
If we didn't talk about reasons, it'd be a pretty quiet show.
There would be nothing to talk about, right? So, I mean, at 2-9, clearly the Jags have not been screwed into 9 losses this year. No one's suggesting that. No one's even, I'm not suggesting that they were screwed into a loss yesterday.
No.
Right? They had plenty within their own control in that football game. But
if we sit here and talk, every week we sit here and talk about how the NFL is about big moments. That's what it is. It's a playmaking league. You got to make the plays when it counts. So if you're going to say that, then on this day, I think it does have to be acknowledged that the Allen Robinson should have been called. There were some that it got taken away from them on that front, and prevented them from having the opportunity to go score. Again, they haven't scored in that situation very often, so I don't know that they would have gone down and won the game. But in that specific instance, they probably deserve the opportunity.
Right, the opportunity. Right. That's what it's all about. And again, like you said, you don't know what's going to come out of that. Maybe they throw a pick six on the next play, and it's a worse loss. You just don't know. But the chance to show what they could have done. Now, it's reasonable for someone to say, hey, you know what? They haven't come through in that situation very often, and even if they got the first down, they weren't going to come through with it. Then that's fine.
No, I would say at that point, 28-21, you have the ball. You would have had first down on about the 35. I'm not going to sit here and say I think they would have scored because they haven't closed that deal a whole lot. It would have been a story had they scored because they haven't done it a whole lot.
It did feel, though, more like a punch-counter-punch kind of game.
Yeah.
Like the Jags scored. All right, Buffalo scored. They missed the extra point. Buffalo goes up. Jags answer. I mean, it was was some, you know, like it was like almost like normal football. Right?
Yeah.
You know, where okay, you get ahead. That doesn't mean the game's over.
Right.
We're allowed to come back and tie or take the lead and those kind of things.
And they've looked a little more like that in the last 3 or 4 weeks. The games have had a little more of that feel. That there was some counterpunching going on, and it's felt more normal with the obvious caveat that they are all 4 losses.
Right, and that's the thing. If this were year one of the regime, you'd say, wow, they're showing signs, right?
I thought the exact same thing this morning.
Yeah, and
as I turned the game off.
In year 4, you got to be winning 3 out of 4 of those contests.
Right. If it was the first year and they had 4 straight games where you played 4 basically contending teams, I'm not saying Buffalo's great, but you saw Kansas City. Kansas City's pretty good, and I know they're without their guys when the Jaguars played them, but whatever. But it was still at Kansas City. Kansas City, Houston.
Boy, does Justin Houston make that team a lot
better.
Ooh, boy, did he dominate
absolutely.
In the first half last night.
Point being, though, 4 straight games against teams that are, by any measure, pretty good teams. And they're in it in the fourth quarter. All these, you know, outgained them for the most part. If that was 3 or 4 years ago, it would be fired up. It's
right.
not, so it's not,
not
good enough.
Exactly. All right. Do we got to take time out here? We'll come back with the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you where do you assess most of the blame from yesterday's contest. Take a few more calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010 with John Osier and Tony Smith. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues live at EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we are on Jaguars Today. John Osier here with us. John, there have been some much-debated decisions from yesterday, decision to repunt the ball. We all here on this panel agree that it's a no-brainer. You're going to repunt the ball, for instance, okay?
Right.
Right. We don't need to further go down that road. Who the blame falls on 4th and 4 for not calling timeout, probably some shared blame in that. The decision to call a timeout with a minute left in the first half, okay? I'm of the opinion that absolutely, I'm calling that timeout.
I was saying under my breath, call timeout, guys.
Right.
I mean,
you're trying. You don't. You can't. If your mentality is, man, our offense isn't very good. We're probably not going to do anything with the ball anyway. Quit now.
Well,
right?
You got. And I can't tell you the number of times I've gotten emails hammering him for not doing it.
Exactly.
So
why,
I mean,
why didn't he preserve the time? Okay. So we agree on that on the decision. Now, this exchange, however, I don't think I can't. Let's just play it. This is Ryan O'Halloran asking Gus about this specific decision after the game.
Right.
End of the first half, you call timeout with a minute to go. It looked like he was going to kick the field goal. Were you thinking try and steal possession there at the end of the first half?
At the first half, when there's about 42 seconds left?
A minute to go, yeah.
Yeah.
You, instead of letting them run the clock out. What was the thinking on calling a timeout there?
With why didn't we?
Why did you call a timeout?
Why did we?
End of the second quarter.
Yeah. There was about 40 seconds left, and we talked about calling a timeout with us to get the ball back, but we decided not to do it.
Yeah, is he talking about after the fourth down? Could he be talking about before the first down play where they scored the touchdown?
I was standing right there. I never got the impression that Gus completely got what Ryan was talking about, and it just sort of – I think he just kind of wanted to get out of the question at that point.
That would make the most sense, though, what Tony said. Because once I do that, then I'm not calling a timeout. Once they pick up the first down, then I want
still
the
had
clock
the one.
To run down.
Yeah, yeah, you still had the one after the fourth
which
down.
Which is pointless because they can control the clock.
I think that's what it was. I mean, I never quite got the feeling that they were on the same page with question and answer on that one.
Yeah.
Right, and I've seen it happen before. Yeah, I get that it sounds kind of silly, but in the heat, right after the game, sort of crazy, I don't think they ever got on the same page in terms of what he was trying to answer.
Okay, that must be because with a minute left, and Ryan tried to set it up. He set it up properly. It was exactly a minute left. The Jags call a timeout. Okay, and they've got a timeout left. And then Jonathan Williams runs for the first down, and then – at that point, I don't think anybody would be calling the time.
No.
It's pointless because you're not going to be able to – they can kind of run it down if they have one running play that doesn't go to the end
but
zone.
But the moment he actually called timeout, there was a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to me, maybe I'm just dumb. I thought it was kind of a no-brainer to call timeout at that point.
Me too.
Absolutely. And people say, oh, man, the Bills were going to kick the field goal if you just let them kick it. That's not how you coach a professional football team. Your defense has dominated to that point in the game. You've stopped them for a loss on numerous occasions. I'm begging you to go for it on fourth down in that circuit. If me calling the timeout makes you go for it on fourth down, I'll call two of them.
Sure.
I mean, honestly, that's hyperbole, but you get the idea. I want you to go for it.
You're assuming they're going to kick the field goal.
Right. You're assuming it's a chip shot.
And you've got a minute left, and you're sort of you're saying to yourself, okay, I'm up seven. I'm going to give up three here, and then I'm going to go get three before the end of the half because I've got a kicker who can hit from 65. So you're thinking I'm going to get it back to a 7-point game at halftime. That's sort of what you're trying to do. Didn't work, but I don't think the thinking was absurd.
No. I'm with you. But and again, I think this and somewhat understandable, but I do want to point out that there's plenty of reasonable blame to cast, right? I mean, again, just point to the record. That's all you need
to
do.
Right, they're 2-9. Obviously, it's not good.
They're 2-9, they're 14 or whatever. Okay, but I'm just saying, for me, I don't want to get swept up in a wave of Gus can't do anything right, therefore, even when he makes the right decision, we're going to blame him. In fact, to the point where somebody called in the postgame yesterday and said, when he decided to re-punt it, it should have been fired on the spot. That's a fireable offense. I'm like,
not even close.
What are you talking about? You know, now you're just getting blinded by your anti-Gus rage. And just, you know, you're allowed to have that sentiment if you want to.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm going to point out the logical fallacy in what you're talking about right there. So let's take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, Tony, on Twitter in terms of where the blame was most cast and why.
Should we start with the punt tweet? I'm just kidding. From Ocho Fisho, referees, I mean, what other reason can we be 14-45? Not Gus. He's a great guy. From Jeff, coaching mostly Gus and Mallory, who have been inept since day one. Special teams for Jags are a joke. From Rob, coaching it again, biggest play of the game, and Jags can't even get a snap off. Embarrassing. From Duval Doom, I want to say refs, but I think 13 points came from poor coaching decisions, so I can't. Coaching from any given Sunday. Here's the honest answer for a lot of fans, I suspect. I just don't care anymore. From Jarrell, players allowed a big run, big pass, and a big return, all leading to Bill's touchdown, so the players for him. From Kyle, been coaching all year, no discipline, out of sync, and fails in crucial situations. From Black Dog, I can't in a clear conscience blame Gus or Blake this time. Inept refs clearly cost us the game. And from Sammy, a typical potpourri of spotty performance, failure to capitalize, and accountants flying in Saturdays to adjudicate.
Several here on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Referees for this game and the Kansas City game, even with those two, we'd still be at the bottom. But the rest is all our fault. Don't blame our D-line. Offense had issues, but our special teams need to crank it up. Everything we face Everything we face a punt kickoff, we look like we're giving away 6 points. Maybe a change there at special teams coach. I don't think Bradley is doing that bad, really. That was the first one. And from Gareth, Matt says, you can't pinpoint one particular thing, blah, blah, blah. We go on. I don't mean to blah, blah, blah you, but I just did. Fourth quarter officiating, they all sucked. I'm reading a variety of responses now. All of the above, because I can't make up my mind. Everyone, the refs are monumentally effing teams up this year. My only argument is that the team needs to play better and good enough to avoid needing a call in their favor to win a game. Okay.
There's that.
Look, the referees
and that's the bottom
blew
line.
Some calls. There was, right. But there were some definite bad calls. Again, I'm not the season. They're not 2-9 because of the referee. They're not.
No, it's weird stuff, though, that happens to them. And I get it. Like, as a fan, I'd be all kinds of frustrated. And would have started week one and would have continued, you know, watching the fair catch that wasn't a fair catch, could have been a fair catch. Why did he lift his arm? Is that a fair catch thing? Like, watching that last week as a fan, I'd be going, what is that? Like, how are we allowing teams in the league to do that? And why is it happening against me if it's going to happen? And calling forward progress on that LeSean McCoy play is absurd.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just an absurd call in that game. It's a tackle, and he fumbles the ball as he's going to the ground, and you watch McCoy. He knows he fumbled. He knows that he fumbled that football by the way that he reacts.
Well, if you drop the ball before you hit the ground, yeah. It's always been a fumble.
I mean, that kind of stuff, that right, no, I mean, that those kind of things happen, and they seem to happen every week in some new way. Yeah. As a fan, it leads to a lot of frustration, but you're not putting yourself in a situation to win outside of that anyway.
Hey, before we leave here, I've got a pair of tickets right now for Jags-Broncos. This Sunday, December 4th at 1 p.m., we'll take caller number 4 right now at 641-1010. Each winner this year when we give away Jaguar tickets is eligible to go into a drawing for a dinner with some Derek Marks at Three Forks and a set of Jaguar-themed rings, all courtesy of Global Diamond. So you can be one of those qualifiers right now and go to the game on us. Jags-Denver coming up this Sunday. Get your tickets right now as the fourth caller at 641-1010. Mr. Osier, Jaguars today, or Jaguars.com, excuse me. I know you're covering Gus's presser today. What else you have coming up?
That's it for today. We'll be doing Gus's presser, trying to, and probably I would think going back over some of the specific detailed scenarios. Monday's the last chance to do that. So I'm sure there'll be some talk about some of the decisions, and we can rehash all that fun stuff.
And then it's on to EverBank with the Denver Broncos.
It's
coming in. Hey, they just gave up 30 yesterday. What defense?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I know. I'm just trying to.
And Von Miller guy is good.
Von Miller is good. Yeah. Tyreek Hill apparently was really good yesterday.
He was impressed. No, I mean it's funny. The last 9 games of this season, tough stretch because you're playing. Every team's still in it. Every team, they all matter. So there are no easy gimmies the rest of the way.
No.
It's tough. It's tough all.
Generally aren't that many, period. There might be one or two in a season like that.
No, if you recall, like in 2013, they had a stretch where they had a bunch of games against teams that are pretty much out of it. Took advantage of it,
got those 4 wins. But I'm saying, even when teams are out of it, that doesn't mean they're all playing like garbage.
Right.
Like that. Given time.
But none of these, I mean, every one of these teams coming up is playing a have-to.
By the way.
Have-tos are tough to beat.
I'm patting myself on the back for picking the Bucks in the playoffs after beating Kansas City and Seattle back-to-back weeks. They're right
there. Impressive.
Right there in striking distance.
It's impressive.
That's going to do it for us. Impressive that I selected them.
You're impressive.
Thank you.
Was what I was trying to say.
I knew you were.
I was stumbling over that.
Appreciate you coming in, man. We'll talk to you later on this week.
All right, guys. I enjoyed it.
There he goes. Johnny O from Jaguars.com, at John Osier on Twitter. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to our friends at Wild West Guns and Gold for bringing you the show today. Thanks to all of you who care enough about the Jags to continue to tune in despite the fact that they are 7 games under 500 on the 2016 season. We will have tomorrow, we've got the Tom Coughlin J-Fund Radiothon going on. So we're still going to talk Jaguar football, but we're going to implore you to do what you can and to donate to a fantastic cause that helps families right here on the First Coast. All the money you donate helps families stays right here in Jacksonville. So we'll be talking about that a bunch tomorrow. I'm very proud to be associated with the J-Fund once again. So for all the aforementioned, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. We'll say hello to the Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
You guys have a good day. Peace.